In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Kiss excellence. Welcome back to another episode of the Sports Hour. This is Mitchmo.
And this is Dallin. Welcome back. Peeps. Mitch, how you doing? How you doing today? You doing good, my friend?
I'm doing fantastic, man. The sun is out, the rain is gone. I thought we were in an apocalypse yesterday. Some flash floods came up out of nowhere. But no, sun's out, weather's warm. Things are good, man. How are you doing?
Wow, flash floods, huh? That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, we did something to piss Mother Nature off. I don't know what we did.
This is the time of year of, like, supposedly great weather, right? May, it's like starts getting real nice. It's nice here in Utah. A little rainy and cloudy, but we had like a really warm, like high 80s weekend. It's feeling nice though. It's feeling nice outside.
Oh,
we're doing good. We're doing good. But how are you, the listener, doing? We hope you're doing well as you decided to take a little bit of time out of your day and join us here on the Sports Hour. And today, we've got an interesting little conversation for you. We decided to look back and create a top 10 teams of the last 20 years since the year 2000. So we've got rankings that we're going to talk about here on the show. We've got a forgotten all-star, and we're going to do a little Last Dance recap. So it should be a fun little show.
Yeah, it'll be a fun one. It'll be another fun conversation. We get to yell at each other maybe a couple times.
And ultimately, each other's nerves. Yeah, and that's what we look for here is opportunities to call each other names, to degrade one another.
We are authors of chaos. We only look for conflict.
You know,
because that's what sports debate's all about.
Yeah,
right?
It's
just say something ridiculous and hope someone bites the hook.
It is
that's
true.
All it's about, right?
That is true. That's what it. That is what it has become. That is.
It's reduced to
yeah,
that. Yes.
Honestly. All right. Well, Mitch, let's start this off with The Last Dance. So episodes 9 and 10 aired on Sunday. We're recording this on Tuesday. So we've got the full picture. The Bulls win the second three-peat. They ride off into the sunset. Phil, Michael, Scotty, Steve Kerr, Rodman, everyone. Just moves away at this point. And Mitch, as we look back at like the documentary as a whole, all 10 episodes, I guess, what are some of the takeaways that you had?
I guess one of the biggest takeaways that I had was this whole, like, how it broke up thing and how, like, almost finger pointy it was. It seemed like they were constantly trying to point the finger at someone, and it looked like it came back on Reinsdorf towards the end. But you and I had a conversation last night of it didn't look like it actually was Reinsdorf that really wanted to break him up, or, you know, he was willing to give them all 1-year contracts to bring everyone back, including Phil Jackson. But the way that Phil reacted to hearing that and wanting to respect what Jerry Krause's plan was at the end of that year, I guess makes Phil Jackson the scapegoat here. But really, I mean, when you break it down, it was Jerry Krause's fault that this team broke up. He didn't want to bring him back. But, you know, you brought up some interesting points last night during our conversation about, you know, logistically as an owner and as a GM, it doesn't make sense to bring those guys back at that time, right?
I mean, it would have been, it's a tough decision. I won't say maybe what the right decision was either way, but to go into a rebuild at that point wasn't like, it wasn't breaking up the 2016 Warriors. You know what I mean? Like it was a very different scenario. You had a lot of guys that were going to need to get paid, including and not limited to Scottie Pippen, Steve Kerr, You know, you had Rodman as well. You had guys, even role players, that because of the success of the team and because of the NBA championships, that they were going to get overpaid. And we see that, Mitch. You know, we see guys that, you know, are on championship teams as role players, and they go out and they get some big time contracts, and they're kind of looked at with higher regards, maybe more than they should, just because they were on a successful team. And so the Bulls faced a situation where they were going to have to pay everyone a lot of money to bring him back. And Jerry Krause said going into that 97-98 season that this was Phil's last year. He said they could go 82-0 and Phil Jackson and win a championship and Phil Jackson's out. So it's ultimately Jerry Krause's fault that the Bulls didn't, you know, go for the seventh ring, if you will, because he set the precedent very early on that they weren't going to come back. And honestly, I think it's the right way to go. I mean, you repeated the three-peat. You were 6-0 in the finals, having never lost. And so if you're Phil and you're Michael and you're Scotty, even if you're continuing to play, but you're walking away from the Bulls, you can walk away saying, what else is there to accomplish? We three-peated twice. Like, if you go back and you lose, well, then you end your legacy, your career on a finals loss. Like, that's tough.
Yeah, no, yeah, definitely. I mean, I guess a little bit of like walk away while you're at the top.
Yeah.
And not even have to worry about the failing to meet expectations. Cause I mean, if they went into 98-99, still intact with all those guys, and they shelled out all that money to pay all those guys, like the expectation is a finals win or bust, right?
Yeah, finals win. I mean, like, that is the not even,
yeah,
just
finals
there.
Win or yeah, bust, yeah. There's yeah, it's not enough to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals or to just get to the finals. Like, it was win or bust, and then if they lose that 98-99 team looks like a complete failure. And then you could start, that creates a whole nother narrative of, you know, were they really worth it? Were they really worth it? Did they get, you know, were those last three, flukes, you know, you could paint all sorts of narratives, if they lose that seventh one.
Yeah. And I mean, it could change the course of history. Like, we talked about this yesterday, but you know, if they go back for a year, and Michael plays for another year, and then he leaves after that 98-99 season, does he unretire and go play for the Wizards? Like, or does he stay retired that time? And obviously that changes his whole legacy if he doesn't go to Washington. Obviously the Washington years haven't really been a detriment to his legacy and his career arc, right? Ultimately, like, most fans and people just sort of gloss over those years. Right. So, you know, without them, does it change much for him? No, but I mean, it does. It could change, you know, going out as a loser on the Bulls. You know, we look at the Bulls as this holy, like, untouchable team. So had they lost a finals, like, the whole era is a whole, it's just completely different. So, fascinating set of scenarios. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think if they lose a finals, like, let's say they go to that fourth in a row. They lose it
to the Spurs.
I don't think
probably
Michael
would have gone there. Yeah, maybe the Lakers, but yeah.
Right. I don't think Michael retires because we just saw in this documentary that what kind of competitor he was. Like, he is a very unique and rare breed of competitor where it's like he has to win or it's going to drive him insane. And so, like, I don't think he has that second retirement until he physically breaks down like he did at the end of his Wizard stint. I think he stays until he gets another one, and if he got one, then he goes out as a champion.
Yeah.
I don't think we see the third comeback if he doesn't win that seventh.
No doubt. And I mean, that opens up a whole can of worms as well, including okay, so the next year would be 99-2000. Well, that's when the Lakers three-peat starts.
Right.
That's the Shaq MVP season, and they were incredible that year. So how does that affect the Lakers' legacy? Do they three-peat if it's the MJ and the Bulls in 99-2000 who they're facing? Do we get a Kobe-MJ finals? I mean, that could have been incredible.
Right. Oh,
I feel like we kind of got like shafted like
the,
out of
the
that.
That's like the dream boxing matchup we never got. You know,
right?
Like,
I mean,
oh,
and we always
it would have been great to see Tyson and Ali fight. Like, it would have been great to see Jordan and Kobe in a finals.
Yeah, and we didn't get that, so maybe we would have got that. But, you know, maybe the Lakers don't win that first finals, and how does that change the trajectory of the Lakers with Kobe and Shaq? I mean, there's a number of, of reactions to those sort of decisions, and ultimately I think the way it happened was probably right. Now, I think it's easy to look back and say that was the wrong decision, considering that the Bulls began to rebuild in the 98-99 season, and they are continuing to rebuild in the 2019-2020 season. So it's been a 20-plus year rebuild now for the Bulls, who, besides a few years and glimmers of hope from Derrick Rose 10 years ago, have not been able to field a competitive team for any stretch of years. And so it's easy to look back and say, well, if you knew that you weren't going to get back to relevancy for 20 years, then yeah, you would take a couple extra years of Jordan and that 90s Bulls team. But I mean, obviously that's with the hindsight that we have now.
Right. Right. Definitely.
But yeah, so that, I mean, that's an interesting thing. I think the one thing, one of the big things I took away from this was a greater appreciation for Scottie Pippen.
Who
really was ahead of his time as far as the position that he played in the NBA, the point forward position, if you will, especially in the triangle offense. You know, his ability to pass, his size, his length, his athleticism. He was, in a lot of ways, you know, the sort of player we see in KD and in like a LeBron and in like a Giannis. You know, he was a, if you will, a prototype of that sort of player, and a guy that they relied heavily on to distribute the ball, you know, on top of the other players that they had. They never really had a true point guard. You know, it was a mix of players, and Scottie was part of that. And I don't think I ever realized that, you know, until I watched this documentary and kind of got to see how they broke it down. And I just get a better appreciation for Scottie, who is extremely overlooked. When we look back at history, some of the greatest players, and part of that is the shadow of MJ. But I think he was ahead of his time in a lot of ways. And I think he would be a top 10 player in today's NBA. And no doubt in my mind, he has the skill set and the physical tools to be that type of player. So I was impressed by that, and I'm glad that I appreciate Pippen a little more now.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, like you said, he ahead of his time being kind of that point forward position. But I think what stuck out most to me about having this new appreciation for Scottie is, like, we knew that Scottie and Michael were like a power tandem together, right? But you didn't realize how much Michael needed Scottie to be there, and then how much Scottie needed Michael there. I mean, they really just kind of like, it was like two perfect athletes just met together at the same time. And you didn't realize how much one another relied on each other. And both of them have said multiple times, you know, I wouldn't have gotten those chips without Scottie, or I wouldn't have gotten those chips without MJ. And, it's a brand new appreciation for the relationship between Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan for me.
So I got a question for you, Mitch. Where does, this is interesting. I didn't prepare this, so we'll kind of just spitball this here, but where does MJ and Pippen rank in NBA duos of all time?
Oh man, that's tough. I mean,
don't give me a rank, but give me what the top, like, give me five duos.
Give you
like
five
who,
duos?
Like who? Yeah, just let's name some guys. Like, let's name some duos who could be some of the best.
Well, Shaq and Kobe.
Easy. Okay.
Klay and Steph.
Klay and Steph is, yeah. Dwayne Wade and LeBron James.
Yeah, D-Wade and LeBron.
Probably have to be up there.
Dirk and Nash.
Dirk and Nash. That was a good one. Though I feel like they didn't really get a ton of, I don't know. Did Nash, I feel like Nash didn't play for the Mavs that long. Maybe that's just my memory.
No, not... Mavs, he was there a while. He just played till he was old.
I guess so. And it was at the later end of his career.
Yeah, because he played for the Suns and the Lakers when he was older.
But... Right. This, yeah. That's a good one.
Nash
mean,
and Dirk, maybe?
Karl Malone and John Stockton. You know, we saw a couple in this whole doc, you know? You got, I even think, you know, MJ Kareem. Or sorry, yeah, Magic Johnson, Kareem.
Yeah, Magic and Kareem. Maybe Isaiah and Lambeer. I don't know. No,
that's kind of lame. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, Isaiah didn't have a good compliment.
And oftentimes, I mean, maybe like a Gary Payton, Sean Kemp. It's probably an underrated duo. Sean Kemp's an underrated player. I'll say that. I'd stick my neck out for him. Tim Duncan, Tony Parker.
Yeah,
they were good for a really long time.
And I think you could sub either one of those out with Manu.
I think it's got to be it's got to be Duncan, and I think it's definitely Parker. It, much like Draymond is the third piece, right, of the Warriors.
That's
three.
True.
It's
yeah.
like Manu was the sixth man off the. I mean, obviously part of the big three, but you know, I don't think the team's quite the same if it's Manu as the two. That's interesting. So I guess I mean MJ Pippen's definitely top five, but I mean I'd put them up there next to Stockton, Malone, Kobe, Shaq, Wade, LeBron, and probably Steph
Clay.
That would
be my three.
Like those are that's five right there that I named that I'd be pretty.
I think my three would be Stockton, Malone, and in no particular order.
Yeah,
Stockton, Malone, Kobe, Shaq, and then Pippen and MJ.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, you know, 100%.
That's my three.
Yeah, fascinating. Yeah, I was just thinking about that, and you're right. I mean, and Pippen's overlooked. It's a shame. And hopefully this documentary does him well for the eyes of NBA fans who can look and say, you know what? No, like Scottie Pippen was like a really, really good player. And I mean, it proved it the first year that MJ was gone, you know, and that was a 50-win team. And Scottie was incredible that season, you know, and it just goes to show like he was a great player in his own right with or without MJ. So,
you know, they didn't play a whole long time together, but what about Chris Paul, Blake Griffin?
I think it's a pretty good duo. The only argument I would make against them is the same kind of argument for like KD and Russ, right? Excellent duo, but they never won a championship together.
That's true. I mean, it did Stockton and Malone.
Yeah, but they at least went, right? And they're some of the best at their position. I mean, like Stockton's number one in assist and steals, Malone's second in scoring. Like they revolutionized the pick and roll. Like there's a lot of reasons why, you know, Stockton and Malone are highly regarded. Like Chris Paul and Blake didn't even make a finals, and Russ and KD did and came up short. And I think you could maybe make an argument for KD and Russ in like a top 10 duos scenario, but ultimately what hold them back is the fact that, you know, not winning a championship together and Jazz, I think with the Jazz and the Stockton Malone thing, I think history does them well knowing that they played against Michael Jordan, right? And if you lose,
they played in the right era. Yeah.
You know, like it sucks to lose back to back NBA finals, but when you lose to the greatest player of all time, like history does you well, you know, like they lost to the greatest of all time. It's like, well, they probably should have won one of those. You know, they're good enough in our book, even if they didn't actually get one. Kind of funny to think about, but any other
I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. Any other takeaways from Last Dance?
I mean, I just wish there was part 11 and 12 coming up Sunday.
Right.
I mean, that was so good. That was
the
so
Wizards
good.
Years. Is that what you're just begging for?
I'm begging for them to do another one. Like we said, I know it's going to be different without Kobe, but I'm begging for an early 2000s Lakers one.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
But I
need to hear from Derek Fisher. That's what I need.
Yeah. Let's put him and Matt Barnes in the same room.
See, this could be great. You'd have meta world peace if you're continuing the Lakers, if it's like a Kobe doc, right? And you're continuing, you'd have some meta world peace in there. You'd have There'd be some great storylines, some great characters in that. No, that's good.
Oh, definitely.
Real quick, Mitch, we have to have this. Let's keep this as brief as we can. But did Jordan push off in Game 6 of the NBA Finals 1998? Did he push off of Byron Russell to hit the game-winning NBA Finals clinching shot?
You bet your ass he did. Reggie pushed off. Reggie pushed off, and MJ pushed off. They were both push-offs. You don't get that. Yeah. Yeah. They were both push-offs.
I got to say, I obviously
sold exceptionally well, but it was a push-off.
I live in Salt Lake City, or I live in Utah, and know many Jazz fans. I work with many Jazz fans, and after watching episode 10, I got to say, I don't think Jordan pushed off. And I know that my neighbors and everyone I work with are going to resent me forever because they will adamantly, to the day they die, proclaim that Jordan pushed off in Game 6. But I don't know, man. Brian Russell's like falling down already. MJ has a hand on his leg and then he just kind of moves it. And I keep saying Byron. Is there a Byron Russell? That was an NBA player, right?
I don't know.
I feel like there was a Byron Russell and a Brian Russell, and that's why I keep saying that. But anywho, he definitely is falling. I don't think MJ pushed him. I'm going to be honest.
Like, I will say that, like, Reggie's was much more blatant.
No doubt.
And, like, completely obvious. MJ did a good job at selling it, but it was still a push off in my book. But
all right.
It's okay. You can go to bat for your hero, for one of your heroes.
Listen, I mean,
you can go to bat for him.
MJ's cool. It's not like there's no bias here, Mitch. I'm honestly looking at this as like objectively as I can.
Uh huh.
I just don't think it pushed off. All right, it's fine. It's fine. It's a heated debate. People in Utah will die with Jordan pushed off on their graves. Like, they believe it with all their hearts. Also, I will say this, nobody poisoned Michael Jordan with a pizza. Okay, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
I don't know, dude. You people in Utah, you guys are pretty ruthless, man.
You know what? Ruthless. Poisoning people, poisoning NBA players. Just like what we do. It's what we're known for here.
I mean, the fact that there was five guys there to deliver one pizza, a little strange.
Okay, but do you believe, Mitch, it's a documentary about MJ under the direction and consultation of MJ? That's just one side of the story is all I'm saying. And it's a story that's going to make MJ look good.
Whose other side are you going to get? The delivery pizza boy? Like,
apparently... Mitch, apparently,
he strikes me as local sports radio. Like, if he says there was five dudes there, there's probably five dudes there, and they probably poisoned his pizza.
Listen, Mitch, don't believe everything that MJ says. Okay, first and foremost, let's just start there. Second of all, there was a man on local sports radio here in Salt Lake claiming to be the Pizza Hut delivery driver that delivered the pizza. And claims there was only two people there. He was a Bulls fan, and he was the one who made the pizza and delivered it himself because he didn't want any of his Jazz fan co-workers touching the pizza that was going to who he thought was a Bulls player, who ultimately was Michael Jordan.
That just sounds like a load of crap.
I don't believe that guy either. I'm just saying, I'm not going to believe him, and I'm not going to believe Michael Jordan. I don't think anyone poisoned MJ.
I mean, I even believed him when he said the ceiling is the roof. I even believed him when he said that.
Wow.
Do you remember when he said that?
No, I don't.
Oh, it was like a pregame thing, and he said, I think he meant to say the sky is the ceiling, or the sky is the limit, but he worded it way incorrectly and said the ceiling is the roof, and which is not the correct way to say it, and thus suggests that there actually is a cap on someone's success.
No, Mitch is so now suddenly... Mitch is just taking it at his word, and he now refers to roofs as ceilings.
It was a ceilings poor wording of a motivational speech. Okay, I'm just pointing out. I even bought it.
Is it? Oh, is it better than the Jameis Winston? We're gonna eat the W. Better or worse than that?
No, that just screams like a serious psychosis problem. The man started eating his hand.
He did. He
even his own teammates had to step in and go like, all right, guys.
He didn't start eating his hand, Mitch. He was licking the crap out of his dirty-ass fingers in front of all his teammates. And they had the biggest side eye of like, what is he doing? Did you wash your hands? I'm not touching the football after he touches it.
Jameis strikes me as the type of guy that doesn't wash his hands after he pees. I'm just saying.
Oh, no doubt. And then he licked his fingers on the field.
What a sicko.
And they said, we're going to eat this dub. And they were like, no, you're going to get E. coli is what you're going to get.
Yeah.
All right. Any more Last Dance, Mitch?
Nah, man. Just a great series. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
No, it was fantastic. All right, well, that's it for the Last Dance. Mitch, you have a forgotten all-star for us this week.
I do. I feel like we need a jingle for the forgotten all-star. Do you not feel that way?
No, I was waiting. I was trying to think of something, to be honest.
Oh, okay. I thought that was like, Mitch, not everything needs a jingle. Gosh, damn it.
No, I was actually kind of waiting for you to just start singing something. I don't know.
Like, I'm imagining like wind chimes in the background, right? And then just like, forgotten all-star. Or something like that.
Huh. Wow. That is not the direction I would have gone.
Well, what way would you have gone?
No, I don't know. I don't want to say, because this is staying in the pot, and I don't want to be embarrassed by my horrible first idea. But I'll let you.
You're saying I should be embarrassed by my first idea.
Listen,
is that what you're insinuating?
I'll leave that up to the listeners.
Are you guys crapping on me right
now?
That's what I want to know.
You guys like wind chimes? Because that's Mitch's idea. It's just a shit ton of just wind chimes.
You know, like a flashback type of sound. You know, like you flashback, like in movies or like when it, that cheesy flashback music. That's what I was envisioning. Maybe not wind chimes, but you know.
All right.
All right, cool, whatever. Let's just move on. That was idea spitballing of the day.
That was good. Keep working on it.
It'll be in the works. I'll come up with something.
It's a work.
If I can come up with one for Mitch Moe's top five, I can come up one for anything.
We're workshopping it, guys. We're workshopping it. We'll be back with better.
Leave us a message on Anchor, guys, and let us know what you think our forgotten all-star jingle should be.
Yes.
Because apparently my ideas suck.
Well,
so
I didn't say it sucked. I just said it was full of wind chimes. I'll let you determine what that means.
Okay. Well, anyway, let's move on to the forgotten.
Who is your guy? Who's the guy this week, Mitch?
Do you remember a guy by the name of Richie Sexson?
Oh, gosh. It sounds so familiar.
So he was a first baseman and a left fielder, probably most well-known for playing for the Milwaukee Brewers and the Seattle Mariners.
See, I knew it. I was like, it's Brewers. I knew.
Big, tall dudes.
Yeah, okay.
String Bean. He was 6'7", 205 in his playing days. I mean,
wow.
String Bean of a human being. But he was a first baseman, left fielder, actually a two-time All-Star. Back-to-back years, 2002, 2003. 306 career homers, only a .261 lifetime hitter, but 2 years of 45 home runs. That was an 0-1 with the Brewers, and an 0-1 and 0-3. I remember this guy like playing those like ESPN baseball video games, and like that was the one of those guys that like I had to have on my franchise team. Like, I just remember thinking, like, I got to have Richie Sexson on my team because that guy just hits dingers all day. Like, do you remember that one guy, like, think back to your sports video games, Dallin, and, like, that one guy you had to have on your team? Was there that one guy?
Oh, you know, I mean, yeah, there's always There's always
he may not be the best guy, but he's probably your favorite guy to play with.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I'm trying to think of like my equivalent when I play like Madden, you know, and in today's day, there's like a player I always go for.
Like I remember NBA 2K5, like mine was Ben Wallace. Like I had to have Ben Wallace.
Oh, yeah.
For some reason. Ben Wallace and Peja. That's who I had to have. But yeah, Richie Sexson, like I said, a two-time All-Star, very short career, only played 12 years, so a short career for a guy that had a lot of success, but the injury bug bit him late in his career, even though he continued to hit the ball at a prolific power rate, slugging over 500 from 2000 all the way through 2006, never dipped below 500. His later years, he obviously dipped down as the injury bug continued to bite him. But Richie Sexson, forgotten All-Star. Don't forget him this time. All right, guys?
Yeah, he's too tall to forget.
He's 6'7", man. That was a unit. A monster.
Could have been a great small forward.
Could have been. Could have been, but he played baseball. Jordan could have been a great outfielder, but he played basketball.
I know. Okay, here's not to bring this back to The Last Dance, but when everyone was like, oh, yeah, two more years in the farm leagues and MJ would have been in the MLB, I call bullshit on that. I'm sorry. I'm not. The guy was like 30 years old playing minor league baseball, and they're like, yeah, a couple more years, and yeah, he would have been a big leaguer. I don't believe it. I don't buy it.
I think of the talent pool back in the early 90s of the MLB, and he might have been a back end of the roster type guy. Because of his work ethic and how much improvement he showed while he was there. I mean, Terry Francona endorsed him. And Terry Francona, we know, great baseball mind, great baseball guy, great manager. He was his manager in Birmingham when he played for the Barons. And just raved about his work ethic and how much he worked at that. I could buy it maybe a couple years in the minors, and he might have made the back end of at least gotten a spring invite.
Yeah, here's the thing though, Mitch. No MLB team in their right mind is adding a 32-year-old who has like 3 years of minor league experience to a major league roster. They're going to add the 25 or 26 year old or 20, like they're going to add a different player over. The only reason why that guy would make a roster is because his name is Michael Jordan. So like ultimately it's not because of the type of player he is. It's his namesake that would have even gotten there in the first place.
Okay. I mean, I get like the name's a big draw, right? You say Michael Jordan's playing for your team. Like they said at the home game sold out every single home game that he was playing in Birmingham. I mean, but I don't know. The guy had a little talent. Guy had a little bit of talent.
No doubt. I mean, not that he wasn't.
It's just a theory.
Not that he wasn't talented, but like, again, you take the name out of it and you're telling me that an MLB team is going to call up like a 32-year-old outfielder who has no major league experience and give him a shot over any number of young prospects that they've been grooming for years?
I think for a club like the White Sox who were struggling at the time, yeah, maybe.
Well, the only reason why he would help them is because he's Michael Jordan and he would sell tickets. That's about it.
Compelling.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Mitch,
anyway,
you're
sorry to overshadow you, Richie Sexson, but you know.
Yeah, ultimately MJ's better, but no, just kidding. MJ was not an all-star in the MLB, so shout out to Richie Sexson.
That's right.
All right, Mitch, thank you for that forgotten all-star. It's fantastic work. Great investigative journalism there.
Yeah, baseballreference.com does wonders.
I was trying to give you like an opportunity to claim that you did all this research. Instead, you were like, yep, baseballreference.com.
Three weeks to just give you those just, oh, such in-depth statistics.
Yeah, you flew to Milwaukee to talk to people from that time.
I had a one-on-one with Richie Sexson.
Incredible.
And He told me to definitely bring up the fact that MJ couldn't have made a major league
roster. Yeah, that was on his mind, no doubt.
And he said, but you don't say it. I want Dallin to say it. And I was like, dude, you got it. You're my boy. I got
it. Are you revealing that our entire show is scripted? Is that what you've done here? Did you just break the fourth wall? Sorry, guys. Turns out we script the entire show.
Everything you know about the Sports Hour is a lie, folks. It's a lie.
This is our last dance. We need just kidding. You're going to know all the behind the
scenes. My name's not even Mitchmo. It's Craig.
Yeah. Oh, man. Mitch, you had a chance to like say something. No, it's cool. My question is, Mitch, did Richie Sexton even fit in the Zoom call because he's so tall?
Oh no, I had to use my TV actually to Zoom call him.
Because
he didn't fit on the laptop.
Because that's how technology works. That if you get a bigger screen, he suddenly fits.
Thus, he fits inside of it. Yeah, that's how that works.
Oh, I love it. Oh man! All right, Mitch. Shall we do this this best teams thing?
Hell yeah, man! Let's.
All
do
right.
It.
So what we have today, ladies and gentlemen, is a little list of the best teams of the last 20 years from the year 2000 on. And we're looking at teams where their season started in the year 2000, right? So no 99-2000s teams. They had to have started in the year 2000. Forward, we did a similar exercise on an episode that didn't end up getting put out, but it was the best teams of the decade, right, of the 2010s. We looked at best players. We also did teams. So we kind of combined this idea with another idea and did, you know, the last 20 years or so. But, this is basically an opportunity to look back at some of the greatest teams inspired by The Last Dance, inspired by looking at, you know, these great 90s Bulls teams and some of the other great teams of those times. So yeah, that's pretty much it. Anything else to add, Mitch?
No, you basically laid out the groundwork for this. My question is, where do you want to start, 10 or 1? I think we got to start at 10.
Yeah, I was going to say I think we start at 10. I think that's the way we go.
Yeah, I think that's the move. That's definitely the move. So let's start at 10. Actually, before we get to 10, do you have any honorable mentions, teams that you want to mention that maybe just missed the cut getting onto this top 10?
Of course I do, Mitch. Of course
okay,
I do.
Well, let me hear them.
All right.
Well, but quit beating around the bush and tell me then. Come on, man.
All right. Well, I don't want to spoil too much because I'm sure some of these teams ended up in your lists, I have no doubt, but a couple teams that I was looking at, the 03-04 Detroit Pistons were a team that narrowly missed for me. The 2016 New England Patriots, that is the that is the team that beat the Atlanta Falcons in the Super Bowl. That was a team that I looked at. The 2002 Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Oh, very good team. Yes.
And finally, the last one is the 01 Diamondbacks.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That was Randy Johnson, Curt Schilling.
Two-headed monster.
That was
there.
An incredible team. So, yeah.
Carlos Gonzalez. That was a good
one.
Tony Womack.
What about you?
So, I only had one written down. I mean, like you said, the 03-04 Pistons definitely deserve consideration. So do the Tampa Bay Bucks, that 02 team, the 01-02 team, excuse me. But, you know, that would be the 02-03.
Yes, they
right?
were 02-03.
No, it's the 01-02.
It's 02-03.
It's okay, it is 02-03, okay. Those teams definitely deserve consideration, but I think the big honorable mention for me was the 2013 Seahawks.
Oh, they didn't make your list.
No, I... You,
okay.
There was an episode that we had recorded before the new year where we did our top 10 teams of the decade, and they were on that list. In fact, they were number 2 on that list, But you look at some of these other teams pre-2010, just some fantastic teams that I just could not overlook. And the Seahawks missed that cut for me as far as trying to keep the list a little bit more balanced as far as what sports are in there. There were some teams, other football teams pre-2010 that I value a little bit higher than the 2013 Seahawks. Very, very close to making the list. In fact, there is a basketball team that I would boot off this list to get them on there, but they just missed the cut.
Wow. All right, Mitch. That's it's going to make this interesting. All right, well, let's jump right into this at number 10. I'll let you go first. Who is your number 10 team of all time?
So my number 10 team of all time was actually that team that I would be willing to take off to put the 2013 Seahawks on, and that is the 07-08 Boston Celtics. 66-16 record under Doc Rivers. This team was just stacked. I mean, this was the big three, the original big three of Ray Allen, Kevin Garnett, and Paul Pierce. This team ran roughshod through the finals. An outstanding team with scoring weapons at all levels of the floor. Obviously, you had Ray Allen at the perimeter, Paul Pierce that could get the mid-range stuff done, and then Kevin Garnett that could get a lot of the stuff done inside the paint, but also played very well outside as well. Big other role player guys like Rajon Rondo, who ran the point extremely well. You got guys like Kendrick Perkins, Eddie House, an older Sam Cassell, and one of my favorite players of all time, purely based off the different hairdos that he had, that would be Scotty Pollard, was also on that team. 14th man on the roster, I just want to point that out. But a very good all-around team. That was also the team with Glenn Big Baby Davis. This was just a fantastic team that finished strong. And you look at the classic post-finals victory clips. This was the Anything Is Possible Kevin Garnett clip team that happened when they won that finals in 07-08. So I got the Boston Celtics at number 10.
All right. Mitch, that's the team that made my top 10 as well. I'll just tell you where I had them now. I had them at 8.
Okay.
So a little higher up, but again, I mean, this was the big three coming together in Boston in a really dominant way. Ultimately they beat the Lakers in that finals in 6 games, but the regular season, 66 wins, like you said. This was just an incredible team, and you named all the players. It was great. Led by Doc Rivers, fantastic. And it pains me to put them on the list because they did beat my Lakers, and I hate the Celtics. But I've got a little interesting order here, and you'll see it in a little bit. But it pained me to put them on here. But I feel that they definitely deserve to make a top 10 here, so I feel that at number 10.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so my number 10 team, I'm going with the 2000 Baltimore Ravens.
What?
As my number 10 team. And the reason...
Explain yourself.
Explain myself why, because they should be higher or they shouldn't be on the list.
No, I don't think they belong on the list. But
really?
I want you to explain why you think that, yeah.
Wow, well, I mean, part of it, too, you look at dominant teams in the last 20 years of the NFL, and there, you know, have been a number, but not a few. There haven't been that many truly dominant teams, Mitch, that not only had a successful regular season but ultimately capped their year off with a Super Bowl victory, right? I mean, we even look at last year, 14-2, Baltimore Ravens can't even get to the Super Bowl. A team like the Niners, who had an incredible regular season, incredible run, don't get the championship. I mean, the 2015 Panthers. I mean, I could go on. The number of teams that had fantastic regular seasons, had fantastic runs, but ultimately couldn't get it done. But the Ravens were one of those teams that actually got it done. Now, they were 12-4, and they were a 4 seed because the Tennessee Titans, who at the time were in the AFC Central Division, the same division as the Baltimore Ravens, got the 1 seed. So Baltimore starts out as a 4 seed, plays in the wild card, They won four straight games to win the Super Bowl. And not only that, Mitch, this is the amount of points they gave up in all four of these games. They gave up 3 points to Denver, 10 points to Tennessee, number one seed, 3 points to the two seed Oakland, and 7 points in the Super Bowl to the Giants. They gave up 23 points in four games on their way to a Super Bowl victory. So not only were they great in the regular season, not only does Ray Lewis win Defensive Player of the Year, not only did they win a Super Bowl, but they did it in dominant fashion. Dominant fashion, led by a dominant defense, a historically great defense. I think they're one of the best teams, they're one of the best NFL teams the last 20 years, no doubt in my mind.
Okay. I need to apologize. I didn't realize how good this team actually was. And I think, because I'm looking at the scores and the statistics and stuff right along with you as you go along through your list. And I think for me, I just associate this team as not as good. And it goes back to the quarterback that won them that championship, which was Trent Dilfer. And even before Trent Dilfer, they had, who was it? It was Tony Banks who was playing quarterback for him. You know, it's just, I owe you an apology. This team was really good.
Thanks.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I agree. Ray Lewis would agree.
165. And I know, I knew, like, the 2000 Ravens had one of the all-time great defenses. I just didn't realize they won 12 games.
Yeah.
I didn't realize they won 12 games. I thought this was like a 9-7 team.
Oh, no doubt. One, like I said, I mean, they start as the four seed. Right, they're in the wild card game, and you're like, wow, they couldn't win their division. Their division, their winner was 13-3. They had 12-4 record. They, you know, tied for the second best record in the whole conference. You know, with
because
with
Oakland. I mean, offensively, this team wasn't very good. I mean, it was very middle of the pack. You look at a stretch from week 5 to week 9; they didn't score over 15 points. In that stretch, I mean, 12, 15, 3, 6, and 6 were what were the point totals for those three games. And so, you know, but you also look the 2 weeks prior to that, back-to-back shutouts. They actually pitched four shutouts during that season. So, no, you're right. I'm wrong. That's a really great team. That's a really great team.
All right, no doubt. Mitch, let's move on to number 9.
Yeah, number 9, we're going baseball. And I'm going to go to the 2009 New York Yankees. 103-59. This, I believe, was the first year of Joe Girardi at the helm. Team pretty much dominated through the postseason. Won the World Series 4-2 over the Philadelphia Phillies. Beat the Angels 4-2 in the ALCS to get there, and swept the Twins in the DS. This team looks like an all-star lineup.
Yeah.
I mean, Jorge Posada, Mark Teixeira, Robinson Cano, Derek Jeter, Alex Rodriguez, Johnny Damon, Melky Cabrera, Nick Swisher, Hideki Matsui. That was their starting 9. Not to mention that they had guys like Brett Gardner, Francisco Cervelli, an older Jerry Hairston, Xavier Nady on the bench, and then you look at the rotation, and just a fantastic five to go to every week with Pettit, Burnett, Chenming Wong, CC Sabathia, and Jabba Chamberlain. Great guys to go to every 5 days, all those 5 days, and then you had the goat of relief pitchers, Mariano Rivera, at the back end of that bullpen. That had a lot of very successful other pieces in there, like Phil Koch and Damaso Marte and Sergio Mitre, Mark Melanson, Phil Hughes. This team was just it was stacked from top to bottom, led by, still in my mind, one of the greatest managers baseball has seen since 2000. It's a shame that he's not managing anymore, this team just dominated. And, I got the 2009 Yankees at number 9.
Yeah, 09 Yankees were great. I had them higher, Mitch. I had them at number 6 on mine. And again, like you said, you named the lineup. It is incredible. They won in dominant fashion, and they basically just owned that year. And we've seen that a couple times in baseball, a team that just kind of owned the season, right? And they owned it all the way into the end. And that's really what felt like the Yankees did that season, is it was their season all along, and then they ended up and they just win the whole dang thing. So the dominance to me is why maybe I had them a little higher over some other teams. In fact, another baseball team. I will say this, the 09 Yankees were the highest ranking MLB team on my list at 6. So, but yeah, I mean, no doubt they're a top 10 team for sure. So you had 07, 08 Celtics, 09 Yankees. I had the 2000 Ravens at number 10. At number 9, Mitch, this is where it pains me. I had the 07-08 Celtics at 8. At 9, I had the 2008-2009 Los Angeles Lakers. And it pains me to put the Celtics above the Lakers. And we talked about the Celtics already, so I'm just going to talk about my Lakers here. This is the 65-win team who comes back from losing to those Celtics in the finals the year before to getting back there. Now, the Celtics can't get past Orlando in the second round. Orlando beats Cleveland in the conference finals. Dwight Howard and Orlando go to the finals, and ultimately the Lakers 4-1 cakewalk Orlando. And I think that's why ultimately I had the Celtics team for the year before above them, because the test was greater in the finals for that Celtics team than it was the Lakers facing off against Orlando, who was a great team with a fantastic player in Dwight Howard, but was not as good as the Celtics or even Cleveland for that matter, but had, you know, the right run at the right time and deserved to be there, no doubt. But the victory, the ultimate championship, just holds a little less weight for me because of that. So the 08-09 Lakers fit in at number 9 for me. Ultimately, Mitch, of the Kobe-led Lakers team, the best team by far is the 99-2000, the first championship. That's the Shaq MVP year. He averaged like 13.6 rebounds and like 27 points. It was incredible. But that one doesn't count for this because it started in 99, unfortunately, or else that would have been like a top three for me. But this is the only Lakers team I got on here, which felt bad, but I had to get one. So number 9, 08-09 Lakers.
Yeah, they, spoiler alert, they were not on my list. I do have another Lakers team higher.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm curious about that then. That'll be interesting to talk about.
But, you know, like you said, a great team. Like you said, I mean, this was the best Kobe-led team without Shaq, in my mind.
Probably.
Because the other team that I have, spoiler alert, has Shaq on it. So, yeah, I mean, can't go wrong with putting, you have to put at least one of those Lakers teams on here, right?
Oh yeah, no doubt.
You can't make a list without one of those Lakers teams. It was, one of the surprising statistics actually that I found was that, Kobe Bryant wasn't even the leader in minutes. It was Pau Gasol.
Yeah.
Actually led the team in minutes. Great choice at number 9.
Yeah, all right, absolutely. Let's move to 8. At 8, I had the 07-08 Celtics. Mitch, who did you have at number 8?
So at number 8, I had the 2001 St. Louis Rams.
Interesting.
Now, this was a team that didn't win a Super Bowl, but I think probably should have won a Super Bowl. This was the first of Tom Brady's Super Bowls that he won with the New England Patriots. They won that game 16-3. 17-20 is what New England won that game by. But look, I mean, this team scored 503 points and gave up 273 throughout the whole year. That's an average of a 31-17 game. First in points for, seventh in points against. So not only did they have the stellar offense, that greatest show on turf era offense, they also had a great defense to complement it. This was a Mike Martz led team, obviously a 14-2 record. Kurt Warner threw 36 touchdown passes, almost 5,000 yards in that season. His bugaboo was the interceptions. He threw 22 interceptions and still led a 14-2 team. But I think that's more of a testament to what Marshall Faulk meant to this team with almost 1,400 rushing yards and almost 800 receiving yards in the same season. 12 on the ground, 12 touchdowns on the ground, 9 through the air. He was just an absolute production machine. This was with that great wide receiver core of Isaac Bruce, Torrey Holt, Ricky Prohl. This was a fantastic team that I think, in my mind, is probably better than that Patriots team that wound up winning the Super Bowl that year. But you got to give it up to the brilliance of Bill Belichick in game planning against that greatest show on turf team. But I can't let the St. Louis Rams go unrecognized. So I had them at the towards the end of my list, but at number 8.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough one when you're looking at these teams that, again, and I mentioned this earlier, had great regular seasons, had great numbers. Everything about them was excellent, but they came up short in the end, right? And it's hard to kind of place those for me. I didn't really consider the Rams because of that, you know, because ultimately they came up short. And maybe they deserve, obviously they deserve some recognition still because they still had an excellent, season nonetheless. But it was kind of hard for me to, you know, figure out where to fit those. So I didn't consider them, but I mean, as you mentioned, historically one of the best offenses we've seen in the last 20 years in the NFL. So definitely deserving of recognition.
Yeah, I don't think championships played as big of a role for me in making this list because I have quite a few teams on here that didn't actually win their title.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
So it's probably because like they were the best team and they probably should have won that title, but for some reason some things happened and they didn't get that title. And so the Rams fall in that category. As one of those teams that probably should have won that title that year. They were the best team in football in 2001. They just didn't get it done in the end. And very narrowly, I might add. I mean, Tom Brady had to put together a drive to get Adam Vinatieri in the spot to kick that game-winning field goal.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. I definitely feel that. I definitely feel it. All right, so that is your 8. Let's move to 7, Mitch. And number 7 for me, I have the, this is where I fit in the 2016 Chicago Cubs. So I had the Chicago Cubs in 16 at 7, the 09 Yankees at 6, slight edge for the Yankees. The 2016 Cubs team was incredible, 103 regular season victories. They win the World Series in the thrilling 7 games against the Cleveland Indians. You had the MVP in Chris Bryant, you had Jake Arrieta, Anthony Rizzo, Javi Baez, John Lester, I mean, Dexter Fowler, Addison Russell. I mean, this was a crazy team. This was a team of destiny. And I think it means more to us as fans knowing that this was the year that a streak was broken, right? The curse was gone. The longest World Series championship drought in history was gone. And I think we kind of look back on it a little more fondly. They definitely had to fight and scrap for this. They had a tough NLCS with the Dodgers, 7 games with the Indians. This wasn't quite as dominant as the 09 Yankees, even though the regular season record is technically better with the Cubs. I think there were some really tough teams that year. And you know, they had to fight their way to a win, not that they didn't deserve it, but when you're comparing teams in their respective years, that's kind of why the Yankees I had slightly ahead of that Cubs team. But the Cubs team was excellent, definitely deserving of a top 10. And those were the two baseball teams I had, the 09 Yankees and the 16 Cubs.
Yeah. So I had the 16 Cubs at 6.
Okay. Yeah.
So we're pretty close to the same page there. I had one more baseball team in there at number 7. Like you said, I mean, it just holds more importance, I think, that team. Even if they had won 97 games or 95 games and still won the World Series, I think that team would still make my list just because of the importance of that team.
No doubt.
And breaking that 108-year drought. Generations of Cubs fans came and went without ever seeing them win the World Series. And that the importance of that team and not just baseball history, but sports history definitely holds a so much more value than just any team that was really good and won a title. So this team has to be on here, even if they weren't one of the highest winning teams. But I had them at number six. My number seven team is a team, again, that did not win a title. It's another baseball team, and I go to the 2001 Seattle Mariners that won 116 games, still an MLB record. Now, they lost in the ALCS. They lost 4-1 in the ALCS to the eventual World Series champion New York Yankees. World Series recipient New York Yankees, or participant Yankees. So they wound up losing to the Diamondbacks in 2001. But you look at this team, 116 wins, a record. A lot of names on here you may not even recognize. Dan Wilson, John Olerud, which you may or may not recognize. He was a first baseman that played with the hard hat. Brett Boone, Carlos Guillen, David Bell, Al Martin was their starting left fielder. Mike Cameron, a young Mike Cameron. Edgar Martinez, the greatest designated hitter of all time, one of the greatest hitters of all time, especially post-dead ball era. But the shining key in all of this, to me, is Ichiro Suzuki, who won an MVP and a Rookie of the Year in the same year. A guy that hit 350 as a rookie coming over from Japan. And we all know Ichiro's lore and what his skill set was. This guy was constantly beating out infield singles on ground balls to second base. I mean, this guy was just he had a laser arm coming from right field. I think we have that I know for me that image of him throwing out Jermaine Dye from right field at third base Dave Niehaus said it best. That's a throw straight out of Star Wars. just an absolute laser to get Jermaine Dye at third.
Niehaus was great, by the way. I just want to say that. Dave Niehaus, super underrated. Most people from Seattle are obviously familiar with him, but for those outside, he's one of the best sportscasters. He was a fantastic. He was a fantastic
voice. Dave Niehaus is up there. He is up there with me with Harry Carey and Hawk Harrelson. He is up there with all of them.
Yeah.
But, you know, this team was just so good. So good. 116 wins. They also had Jay Buhner on this team. Now, he missed a lot of the year, the majority of the year. He only played 19 games during this season. This was actually after they lost Randy Johnson. So Johnson not a part of this. But Freddie Garcia. I don't know if you remember Freddie Garcia, but he had one of his career years. Jamie Moyer, the ageless wonder, had one of his career years as well. This was just a well-put-together, very cohesive team. I could not have the Seattle Mariners not on
interesting
this list.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, they came up short. It's fascinating that you made this list with quite a few of those teams in mind, because I definitely wrote down some of these teams, right? I have quite a number of teams that I, you know, initially when I was just naming teams that I could think of. A lot of teams like this that didn't actually win the championship, but had very successful teams. And obviously you look at a team like the Mariners and the team you mentioned before that, the Rams, record-setting teams that came up short. Fascinating that you added them, and I valued championships over that. But, I mean, your argument's valid. I mean, they were fantastic, no doubt.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so we have done 6 through 10, Mitch. Will you go back and let's name our where we're at so far on our list before we move on to the top 5?
Yeah, so number 10 I had the 07-08 Celtics. 9 I had the 09 Yankees. At number 8 I had the 01 Rams. Number 7 I had the 01 Mariners at number 6 I had the 2016 Chicago Cubs.
Okay, let's do the top 5 here, Mitch. And at number 5, I have a team that you already mentioned didn't make your list, and that is the 2013 Seattle Seahawks. I had them at number 5, and Looking back at the Seahawks team, this is the team that went to the Super Bowl, the first Super Bowl with Russell Wilson, and they throttled Peyton Manning and the record-setting offense for Denver Broncos. This is the emergence of the Legion of Boom. This is the emergence of Seattle football as we know it today. It's the formula of Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson and the way that they built this team. It's, you know, this is where it first worked, right? And this team was incredible. And you look at the names on this team, especially on the defense. I mean, that's really what we're looking at here, is this defense. And a young Russell Wilson who did enough, was poised enough, although inexperienced, to not only get to the Super Bowl, but ultimately win it. Now, he had a ton of help, no doubt. I mean, if you're going to give a young quarterback a chance to win in the Super Bowl, they definitely did that, right? But ultimately, I just think this is an extremely impressive team. One of the most impressive NFL teams that we've seen in the last 20 years. In fact, they're the number two NFL team on my list. So, yeah, I went 13 Seahawks at number five.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, they warranted strong consideration for me. A 13-3 record, the number one defense. This was at the height of the Legion of Boom, but also complemented by a number eight offense. I mean, this was no slouch at the offensive side of the ball. You had Marshawn Lynch that ran for almost 1,300 yards. You had Russell Wilson, who was showing what kind of great game manager he can be and what kind of great playmaker he can be. Also taking care of the football. This is a great team. And, you know, in hindsight, do I regret keeping him off the list? Sure I do.
Good.
Sure I do. I just think that I just wish that there was 11 slots on this list. And I think that there's some NFL teams that are just a little bit better.
Okay. All right. Who's your number five?
So my number five, this is when my Lakers team comes in. And I got the 2000-2001 Lakers. So this would be the second championship team?
Yeah.
Correct? Yeah, so this would be the second championship Laker team. Finished at 56-26. I mean, just listen to the roster. I mean, Kobe Bryant, Derek Fisher, Rick Fox, Devin George. One of my punchable faces, by the way, Devin George. Horace Grant, Ron Harper. See a lot of former Bulls on
right?
here.
Right? Isn't that funny? I looked back at those rosters doing the research for this, and it was like, oh, wait, there's all those Bulls guys. Phil Jackson was like, where are my guys? Let me go get Ron Harper. Let me go get Horace Grant. It's actually really interesting.
Yeah. You got Robert Horry, Mr. Clutch. And then, of course, the big Diesel, the big Aristotle, the big Cactus, Shaquille O'Neal, starting at the five here and being the other half of one of those great NBA tandems that we were talking about earlier. Look, this team was just a fantastic compilation of players and really just, you can't leave a Lakers team off of here. And I think this is selfishly, it might be probably my favorite Laker team of that run. And so, and this is coming from a non-Laker fan. So I love this Lakers team, even though Tyronn Lue got stepped over by AI. this is probably my favorite Laker team, and I couldn't leave a Laker team off this list, so they roll in at number five.
Yeah, no doubt. Incredible team, and that was another one, too, that I was debating on. Where do I fit in as far as that team against the 08-09 Lakers team that won that championship? That was a tough one for me, but I respect having the Lakers so high on the list. Mitch, I'm not going to argue with that at all. I am a big fan of that. So, all right, let's go to number four, Mitch. I'm going NBA here at number four.
Okay.
And I'm looking at a team that did win a championship, the 2015-2016 Cleveland Cavaliers is the team that I have at number four, who ultimately there were teams with better records, you know, who had better rosters, arguably. But this is a team that defied all the odds, came back from 3-1, beat the 73-win Warriors team, and cemented themselves in history. And ultimately, it was a team that came together at the right time, who was playing the best basketball at the right time to get the win. And that's what they did. They beat the Warriors. And you can't, like, it's LeBron's greatest accomplishment. It's one of the greatest accomplishments in sports of all time. I mean, 3-1, nobody had done that in the finals. And LeBron did that against arguably the best regular season. Well, the best regular season record of all time, that's for sure. At least one of the best regular season teams of all time in that Warriors team. So I'm going to go Cavs, 15-16 Cavs at number four.
Yeah, you know, I don't have a Cavs team on my list.
You didn't have them on your list, Mitch? The 3-1, no. LeBron. What?
Yeah, it's great. They're a great team. They're
and you had the Mariners? Who didn't even get to a World Series?
Oh, but they won 116 games. You
get,
just talked about that
they
earlier.
Didn't get to
what
a
are you
World
talking
series,
about?
Mitch, and you. Oh, okay. All right.
You just talked about how there are some records that just you just can't ignore. And 116 wins, even in today's baseball. How are you going to beat that?
Well, I mean, somebody did. Because they didn't even
there's
make
gonna
it
be,
to
there
the
are gonna
damn
be other
World
teams,
Series.
There are going to be other teams that come back from 3-1 in the finals. I think you'd be hard-pressed to bet on a team that's going to win 116 games or more in a season, in a major league season.
Okay, well,
I think
how
you'd
about,
be hard-pressed to do that.
How about they win 116 games and then actually go and, like, do something after that? You know, like, go to a World Series or, like, better yet, win one. Like, I understand the regular season thing, but, like, the Cavs pulled off the unthinkable. This is the best team ever. The 73-win Warriors, Mitch. And they weren't too shabby in their own right. That's crazy. All right, that's fine.
I don't know. I think you're wrong.
That's
I think
fine.
You're wrong.
Okay, what's your number four?
At number four, too. At number four, I mean, you must have... There are two teams you must have above them that I'm thinking of. And I might know the third. I might. I'm not betting any money on it. But there has to be at least two teams, and they're the same team that has to be above that one. And you're putting them at number four?
Yes.
Come on, man.
What's your number four?
My number four is the 2007 New England Patriots.
Oh, you had them at four. Interesting. Your Mr. doesn't matter. Your Mr. doesn't matter that they win a championship. I had them at number two, Mitch. They were undefeated.
They lost on a fluke.
I know. I had them at number two, and you're telling me that championships don't matter. You had them at four? That's borderline disrespectful for a team that only lost one game.
I never said championships don't matter. I never said that. Don't
no,
you put
No, I didn't
out.
Say that, but I said that
you just
have,
said it. No, you just said it. Did you I, just said okay. that I said that championships don't matter. What are you talking about?
What I meant to say is that you don't weigh championships as heavily as I do, which is true.
Because
yet,
there are better
yet,
teams that don't
well, yes,
necessarily win championships.
And yet, you had the 07 Patriots at number four. I had them at number two. How did they get
That's
so low?
That's fine. I got another team that didn't win a championship even higher than them.
Holy cow. How, Mitch? They were undefeated until the Super Bowl.
You're damn right they are.
Yeah, but how so? Yeah, how are they at four? How are they not higher?
How are they not higher?
Yes.
Let me tell you. Look, they lost on a fluke. This team should be winning a Super Bowl, right? But Eli frickin' Manning and his dumb face pulled off this great escape the sack type play. Throws it to Dominique. Is it Dominique Hickson? No, David Tyree. It was David Tyree over the middle. The helmet catch. We all know the play. Then he finds Plaxico Burress in the corner of the end zone. They lose the game, okay? The Patriots, I want to move past number four because I think that putting the 2007 Patriots at number four is not that much of a travesty.
I disagree. For a team that was 18-1, and you're talking about the Mariners have to make it because they won 116 games. But yet the 18-1
Patriots can't get you're talking
Patriots
about a team that came back
three.
From 3-1 and, oh, God, they have to be in a top five. They came back from 3-1. It was the impossible. Bullshit, it's the impossible. I guarantee you we'll see another team that comes back from 3-1. Guarantee you.
Okay, well, it had never been done before that. So what do you mean it's, like, not that hard?
Oh, then let's put the 04 Red Sox on here. Let's put the 04 Red Sox on here because they came back from 3-0.
Maybe they
should. Let's put them on here as one of the greatest teams in the last 20 years.
More context than just coming back from 3-1. It's also coming back from 3-1 to the unanimous MVP Steph Curry and the 73-9 Warriors.
Do you remember who the Red Sox came back against in 04?
I'm just saying, you're arguing the Red Sox as if it diminishes the Cavs argument. I'm saying that maybe the Red Sox should be top 10 then. Like you're just reinforcing my argument.
Well, but no, they shouldn't
argument.
Be, though.
Well, the
they
Cavs
shouldn't
should.
Be.
And the Patriots should be higher. Mitch, who do you have at number 3?
Okay. Whatever.
Who do you have
number
3?
I got the 2015-2016 Golden State Warriors, 73-win team.
That
I got
is,
at number 3.
That is exactly who I have at number 3, Mitch.
Okay, cool. Then let's talk about it.
I had, and this was the hard one for me, because I do have the Warriors ahead of the Cavs, even though the Cavs beat them that year. But again, regular season, 73 wins, unanimous MVP, back-to-back MVP for Steph Curry. I mean, this is one of the greatest basketball teams of all time. And say what you will, obviously, they came up short in the end, which is why, you know, if they go on to win a championship, they're number one, right? Like, if they win the championship that year, they're the number one team on this list. Easy. Like, it's a simple formula, but they didn't. So now it comes into question, where do they fit? Top three seems right, even with a loss in the NBA Finals. Who came to against LeBron James in a Herculean effort? So, you know, three seemed about right. Top three for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they deserve a top three slot. That's for sure. I'm still mad at you.
What? I'll never understand you, Mitch. You're my best friend. I'll never understand you. It's fine. It's good.
I feel like it's pretty understandable to know why I got the Pats at number 4.
I
feel like it's pretty understandable.
I think it goes against everything you've stood for this entire list of all these teams that didn't win a championship but had incredible seasons nonetheless. And the Patriots are like arguably besides
they had an
the
incredible
15,
season
the
fi- and they didn't listen, win a championship.
Listen,
what are you talking about?
Stands the 15, it? The 15-16 Warriors and the 07 Patriots are in the same boat. Incredible record-setting regular seasons ultimately came up short. And you had been advocating for these teams this entire time, so it's just surprising to me that they didn't end up higher on your list because you had been advocating for them. That's all I'm saying.
Look, here's where I'm confused is. You've been waiting championships this whole time. And now you're, I've said like, no, necessarily a championship doesn't matter. Like I'm looking at the team. I'm looking at what they did throughout the course of the whole year.
Right.
Right. You're going to knock me for putting the Mariners on here who won a record 116 games. I didn't even put them in the top 5. I put them at number 7.
You did.
And honestly, that might've been just a touch high.
Maybe a little bit.
I'd put the 09 Yankees above them. If I could flip 7-9, I would. If I could flip 7-9, I would. I just don't get it, Dallin. Like the Val. I'm done.
It's
I'm
good.
Done.
Okay, Mitch. Let's
I'm
go
done.
To number 2. We're almost at the end. I had the 07 Patriots at number 2. I said that already. Again. You know, Eli Manning heroics, David Tyree heroics aside, this was an incredible team that came up short. And sometimes teams that don't win championships are still great teams. So that's why I had the Patriots at number 2. Who did you have at number 2?
I had the 2004 New England Patriots at number 2.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I did.
So what's the
14?
So why 04 Patriots over 07 Patriots.
I see what you're arguing now. So what this comes down to, Dallin, is
a championship.
I feel like you could flip flop 07 and 04. I just felt like 04 was better. That's all. I'm not gonna say it was a championship. It's just a gut feeling, you know.
Are you sure it's not the fact that they won a championship and that matters? It's fine, Mitch. You can put the 04 Patriots at number 2 over the 07 Patriots.
Look, this is so objective. Like,
of course, yeah.
Like this is such an objective list. Like, I just like the 04 team better than the 07 team. It has nothing to do with a championship. Yeah, they happen to win a championship. They did.
You just like them better. That's cute.
Why the hell not? Why not? Oh, I know what you're getting at. They also did.
Getting at.
Don't you do that,
dude? Deion Branch was the Super Bowl MVP that year. Shout out to Deion Branch.
Yeah, Deion Branch. What about that, huh? Corey Dillon, 1,635 rushing yards, 12 touchdowns. Guy was an animal. One of those few Patriots teams over the last 20 years where you see a guy that could be a leading rusher or is a leading rusher. I mean, Corey Dillon just absolutely lit it up on the ground. Yeah, I mean, they didn't have a 1,000-yard receiver on that team, by the way. I just want to point that out. Didn't have a single 1,000-yard receiver on that team. Tom Brady goes 28-14 for 36-92. Actually, one of his down years. That was in his age 27 season. But they had the second-ranked defense in the NFL, a fourth-ranked offense. This team was just very, very well put together.
Yeah, and Mike Vrabel caught a touchdown pass in the Super Bowl. So
there is that, too. Yeah, yes,
you can't hate that, Mitch. Way too high for the 04 Patriots, but that's fine because this is an objective list.
What?
Which means,
wait,
Mitch.
So
which,
that means you don't have them on here.
No. The 04 Patriots are not anywhere near my list.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Which means that we have the same team at number one, unless somehow we just did this completely wrong. And that team should be the 2016-2017 Golden State Warriors.
Yes. Yes.
And this one is easy. This is the first year of Kevin Durant, and it was the year the team, you know, we had the 15-16 Warriors at number three. And that's adding KD, it was just too much. It was just too much for LeBron and the Cavs that year in the finals. It was too much for everybody that year, for that matter. This 16-17 team, although the year before they had a better record, this team is arguably the greatest NBA team of all time in terms of the actual players on the court. Like, you had to play a game, right? And the only other team in my mind that's rivaling this is like the 96 Bulls. That was the 72 win year for the Bulls. That's, you know, like, there are not many teams that could stack up against that Warriors team. One of the best ever. And obviously, they win the finals. They get redemption. KD gets the ring. And, you know, we all know kind of how that goes. But that was the easiest thing for me, Mitch, was putting that team at number one.
Yeah, I mean, is this the greatest shooting team of all time?
Oh, 100%. Especially in the era that we are in the NBA, where three-point shooting and just efficiency in general has increased. Yeah, absolutely. This is the best shooting team ever.
Yeah, I mean, you look at what their effective field goal percentage, which is lowercase EFG percentage. This is a statistic that adjusts for the fact that 3-point field goal is worth one more point than a 2-point field goal. If you look at that percentage, KD, Steph, and Klay all shot close to 60% for that.
Wow.
And they, I mean, three guys average over 22 points a game. How can you stop that? No. How can you stop that?
You cannot.
And then you have then you have the defensive prowess of Draymond Green, the spark plug, the defensive guy. Same thing with Iggy. You had a great role player guy like Sean Livingston, one of my favorite NBA players of all time, just because of his role-playing ability. This team was just unbelievable. Unbelievable. And arguably, I mean, obviously fewer regular season wins, but this team was better than that 73-win team. If you put the two up against each other, this team blows that 73-win team out of the water.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, KD is the cheat code, right? I mean, you took a 73-win team and you added Kevin Durant, who may go down in his career as at least a top 10, maybe even a top 5 NBA player of all time, depending on how his career plays out. I mean, he's an incredible player, and that's what you added to a 73-win team. So it's just cheating at that point. And that's why they end up at number one on the list. So, Mitch, let's run through these lists real quick here. Your top 10 greatest teams the last 20 years since the year 2000.
Yeah, so my number 10 is the 07-08 Boston Celtics. Number 9 is the 09 New York Yankees. Number 8, 2001 St. Louis Rams. Number 7, 2001 Seattle Mariners. Number 6, the 2016 Chicago Cubs. Number 5, the 2000-2001 LA Lakers. The number 4 slot goes to the 2007 New England Patriots. Number 3 is the 2015-2016 Golden State Warriors. Number 2, the 04 Patriots. And number 1, the 2016-2017 Golden State Warriors.
All right. My top 10, at 10, I had the 2000 Ravens. 9, the 08-09 Lakers. At 8, the 07-08 Celtics. 6, the 16 Cubs. At 7, the 2016 Cubs. At number 6, the 2009 Yankees. Top 5, number 5, the 2013 Seattle Seahawks. At 4, I had the 15 and 16 Cavaliers. At 3, I had the 15 and 16 Warriors. 2, the 07 Patriots. And number 1, the 16 and 17 Golden State Warriors. So, Mitch, that is the lists. Interesting stuff here. I am intrigued by some of these picks. You know, I honestly thought we'd be a little more on the same page, but we had a little bit of disagreements here, which was fun.
Yeah, I think that we just I guess for me, when I was making this list, it was championships hold value, and I think championships hold value in certain spots, and then I think also regular season accolades also hold their value in their own separate category. And so that you need to separate those two and look at them. And when you have accentuating circumstances like the 07 Patriots, 18-0 going into the Super Bowl, you can't keep them outside the top five, but they also didn't win the chip. When you look at the 04 Patriots, yeah, they were 14-2, but they got the chip. And maybe that team was just constructed a little bit better. Same thing with the Seattle Mariners, where they win 116 games and they don't quite get the job done. I think you still have to hold that team in high regard. So I think maybe mine's a little bit of a different philosophy when I'm coming to constructing these lists. But that's what makes this stuff fun, right?
Oh yeah, no doubt. Very interesting stuff, guys. Let us know your thoughts on this. You can leave us a voicemail on Anchor, or just tweet at us, send us a message on Instagram. The Instagram is at the Sports Hour Guys. The Twitter is at Sports Hour Guys. You can also follow my Twitter at Lil Thoint. Mitch, that's about it for us today.
That's all we got, man.
That is all she wrote. So we appreciate you sticking around for approximately an hour and a half and hanging out with us. We appreciate it. Be sure to subscribe to the pod if you don't already. Check us out on Anchor. We appreciate Anchor. It's a great hosting website. If you have a podcast of your own, if you think you're thinking of starting a podcast, we highly recommend it. So go follow us on there. Mitch, what are you looking forward to this week in your life? Anything going on? Anything fun? You gonna watch something? You're gonna do something? You're gonna be something?
Well, you know what? Live sports is back. I'm a motorsports fan, so NASCAR is back. I watched the race this Sunday. I'm watching the one tomorrow night at Darlington Raceway. Stuff is starting to get back to normal just a little bit. I need a little bit more of normalcy, and it's starting to get there.
Nice. That sounds great. I didn't know they were back quite yet.
Yeah, they just ran their first race on Sunday. Kevin Harvick won that race. So
that guy's still racing?
What was that?
Said that guy's still racing?
Yeah, I think he's going to be racing around for a long time, man. He just picked up his 50th career win, so that's a good milestone.
Yeah, he'd been around for a minute. I guess I'm surprised.
Yeah, he actually replaced Earnhardt Sr. after his tragic passing.
Wow, so yeah, 20 years.
So he's been around since 01, so yeah.
Wow.
And he's still kicking strong, man. The guy's still, man, he's a driver, man. He's a racer. So, yeah, no, I'm just excited to watch sports. We got that, what's that golf match we got coming up? We got Brady and Peyton playing with Tiger and Mickelson coming
up,
right?
Yeah, and that should be pretty fun.
That'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that should be a good time. We're, like you said, things are starting to open up. We're going to be getting some more sports, you know, here in the next little bit. We'll see how it all shakes out. But, you know, we're looking forward to it, of course. Looking forward to the fall, the NFL season. College football will start up. We'll probably have the NBA back and the MLB back by then. So, you know, we're a couple months away from this still, but good to see things start to pop up. I have not watched any, like, Japanese League Baseball, which I know they've been airing on ESPN. I know a lot of people that are enjoying that. I just...
Oh, Korean League. Have
Korean
some respect.
League. Excuse me. Apologize.
Have some respect. Come on.
Thanks, Mitch. Just getting berated. Yeah. I feel bad now.
Well, you're going to berate me about my list. I'm going to berate you.
Well, yeah, fair enough. you know, I just want my sports. I'm not the type of person that can just watch anything. You know, I need the things that I like. So I patiently wait and I'll just rewatch old games and be happy and hope another documentary comes into my life.
Yeah, I lucked out with being a motorsports fan, and that motorsports is starting to come back. So
yeah, that's great.
I kind of lucked out with that, but I'm ready for other sports to come back too, man. I'm ready for baseball to get started at some point. I don't know what the NBA has planned as far as maybe getting their playoffs rolling, or finishing out the season, or I don't know what they got planned, but I'm ready to see that. I'm ready. I want football to start on time, man. I'm ready for all of it. I'm going crazy, Dallin.
Yep.
I'm going crazy.
Same here, my friend. But we do have this podcast to calm our nerves and to keep us in the right mindset so we don't go too crazy. So we appreciate you guys listening, tuning in, being a part of this with us. We appreciate it. It's good. We're all going through this void together, right?
That's right. We're in it together, man.
We are in it together. All right, appreciate you guys. We'll catch you next week.
See ya.